In this week's episode of Studio Inter, we'll be reviewing the matches against Bologna and Brescia. We'll be previewing the upcoming game against Borussia Dortmund, this week's Moggi, Moratti and Frog, and much, much more. Everything here on Studio Inter, only on sempreinter.com.
Recupera Brozovic, andiamo in contropiede, la porta è vuota, tira, attenzione, è gol!
Benvenuti, bentornati to another edition of Studio Inter. I'm your host Nima Tavalli Ruzzari, wishing you all welcome back to an episode where we're very cheerful. At least things have been going really well since we started again after the international break last month. But before we get to all of that, I would like to introduce my panelists all the way from Dubai, the sempreinter.com's preview writer, Mr. Mohamed Nasser.
Hey everyone, very happy to be here.
Good to have you as always, and you sound as positive as always, so that's a good omen. I'd also like to welcome Mr. Will Beckman, who used to be on sempreinter.com, and he used to be on Serpents on Madonnina, and now he's on Love Sport Radio. Well, basically the media personality that is Mr. Will Beckman. Welcome to the show.
We'll do that title, shall we? Good evening. Or not good evening if you're not listening to this in the evening. That's fine too.
that's nice. And we're also joined by our good friend Mr. Critty Smith, who used to do the Interlegends, and well, I don't know, will he soon be doing them again?
Yes, he will. He will be soon doing them again.
It's good to hear. And we are also joined by the founder of the Football Grad Pod and the site. And he also covers Bundesliga for Forbes and for Pro Soccer USA, making a Studio Inter debut from Dusseldorf, the media days, the DFL media days in Dusseldorf, Mr. Manuel Fett.
Hey, hi Nima, how are you doing? Thank you for having me on.
It's our pleasure. It's good to have you on. Right, let's get to it. You and I have been talking for quite a few years now, Manuel, and obviously I know that you cover the entire Bundesliga, but from an Inter perspective, what's really interesting for Inter is Bayern Munich, given that Ivan Perisic is there, and also Borussia Dortmund, given that Inter are going to face them away at the Westfalenstadion this coming week. I'd like to first talk about the Perisic situation, because obviously that's really important for Inter if Bayern Munich will exercise that option to redeem him, making the transfer permanent. And it's a two-part question. The first part of the question is, how has he been doing so far? What's your impressions of him? And how has his performance been received by the Bayern faithful? And also, do you think that Inter will Bayern will redeem him?
Those are questions that have been all very made very complicated in the last 48 hours, Nima.
I know.
Eventful. I was at the game yesterday in Frankfurt, and I spoke to Niko Kovac. And I'll be quite honest and frank with you. Ivan Perisic was the last thing on our minds. We had that conversation. It's such a difficult situation at Bayern at the moment. And I think that is something that you have to keep in mind when you speak about Ivan Perisic, right? And what his potential future could hold, because I think it's very much tied to who is going to be the head coach by the time Ivan Perisic's loan spell is over, because we don't know who is going to be that person. I mean, it could be Niko Kovac. They gave him a new lease on his life today. They decided that, you know, Niko Kovac has given two more games. At the same time, if they play like they did against Frankfurt on Saturday, I doubt that there's going to get anything from the Klassiker on next Saturday against Dortmund. And that would probably end that spell, that Kovac spell. And Kovac was a big reason why Ivan Perisic is at the club, right? Because they needed a left winger. They needed a player that could fulfill the role that was supposed to be filled by Leroy Sané, and never joined the club because of his ACL tear. And I think that he came in as a stopgap solution. This is no disrespect to Ivan Perisic. I think he's a great player. You know, he's a player that can bring a lot to the table. But he's at an age now where you can't build a club around him. for the next 10 years. And that's how Bayern conduct their businesses. Remember, Arjen Robben and Frank Ribery were there for 10 years. And that's the kind of players that they're looking for to bring in. So I find it very difficult to see Ivan Perisic at the club, but mostly because I find it very difficult to see Niko Kovac still being at the club by the time the summer comes around, if that makes sense.
Sure, but what about his performance? That makes perfect sense. But what about, I mean, how would you rate his performances so far?
I think he can't be blamed for what's going on. I think when he comes on, he does his job. He does his job well. I think he adds a certain amount of experience to that side. You know, he plays that role on the wing very well. I think that in terms of the level that he performs at, he is an important squad player for the club. At the same time, I don't think he's a world beater either, right? He's not going to win Bayern the Champions League.
No, that's
the reality of it. And again, that's no dig at Ivan Perisic. I always thought he was a wonderful player. I remember when he played at Wolfsburg, he was just fantastic. He had some very good years at Inter. I was actually very surprised when he became available this summer. So I think, you know, this is a player I really enjoy watching. I was at the World Cup in Russia and I enjoyed watching him for Croatia as well. I just don't think he's going to be, his performances have shown that when he was there, when he was on the field, he's reliable. That is pretty much the way I've seen him. He's a player that comes on and he does what is asked of him. Is he going to change the fortunes of Bayern Munich at the moment? No, he cannot. And that's not his task. So how I would evaluate his current situation.
That's a fair assessment. Will, I'm going to hand you over to Will if he has a question for Manuel.
Hi, Manuel. Thank you for joining us. I wondered if you could give us just an update on what Borussia Dortmund have been getting up to since we saw them at San Siro a couple of weeks ago. I wasn't disappointed with how they played, obviously, because it was a good result for Inter, but I expected them to provide a bit more of a stern test for Conte's side. So would you say they're in a better place than they were 2 weeks ago, you know, in terms of maybe the mood and injuries? Are they in a worse place? How different do you think this game is going to be based on the last 2 weeks or so?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a crucial game for Borussia Dortmund because you're quite right. I think the way you summed up the game against Inter Milan is bang on. They were disappointing. And I watched that game and I thought that Inter were very good in identifying Dortmund's weaknesses, shutting them out, confining them to the wing play. There was no penetration in that final third, right? There was no penetration into the center where, you know, good old saying by Franz Beckenbauer, the goal is in the middle of the field, not on either wing. But that's just the reality of it, though. And the Conte's team was so good of keeping all these fantastic attacking options that Dortmund have confined to the outside spaces. And you cannot score goals from there. It's just not possible, right? And I thought that they were very effective in that and that Lucien Favre came up with very few solutions to counter that. I mean, this is in very many respects, and I know Conte is a better coach than what Inter had before. And it's a different team. It's in transition, a club in transition. There's lots of good things happening. But I saw them against Eintracht Frankfurt, I think that was 6 months ago now, right? And I was in the game. I was at that game in Frankfurt. You know, did very well containing them. And Dortmund, who have a much better side or much better equipped, are by their own definition a Bundesliga title challenger at the moment. They have very, very few solutions to break down a very well organized Conte side. And look, other teams are figuring this out too. The three at the back is becoming a very common formation in German football. So I think that they got asked a lot of questions. Now, to answer your other question, what kind of position they're in, I would say on paper, at least, they have answered some of the questions that Inter asked of them in that particular game. I thought that against Borussia Mönchengladbach, where Borussia Mönchengladbach are currently the first place team in the league, in the German Cup, they won that game 2-1 after being down by a goal. I thought that Julian Brandt playing in the center role did very well. He is much better suited to play as a number 10. Of course, he was only able to play as a number 10 because Marco Reus is out with an injury, right? And I thought that suits the club almost better, playing Brandt in that role. And funnily enough, when they played Wolfsburg, and Wolfsburg are a side that plays 3-4-3. So again, a very similar formation, right? And they won that game 3-0, but they won that game after Marco Reus again walked off with an injury. This is, again, Marco Reus is Dortmund's most important player, but it's almost interesting how when he is not on the side, all these new signings that they made, Thorgan Hazard, Julian Brandt, you know, they almost do better without him on the field because they seem better suited to play in some of the areas that Marco Reus covers. And it's going to be interesting to see whether Marco Reus is going to be fit for the game against Inter and whether that's going to actually bring better fortune to Lucien Favre in that particular game, because he will be forced to come up with different solutions in his tactical formation than what he usually does. Lucien Favre is a very conservative man. He likes to play the same players day in and day out. He likes to not rotate his formations very much, which is something that he's been very heavily criticized here in Germany for. So, you know, having a couple injured players actually forced him into coming up with different solutions. And the solutions against Wolfsburg worked. And this Wolfsburg side is a side that has previously been undefeated in the Bundesliga, right? So I think that it's kind of interesting how they kind of had to move and change things around because of injuries. And it's going to be this Inter game is going to be a very big test, because I think that they at home, they have to win to have any chance to advance in the Champions League.
Mo, did you have a question for Manu?
Yeah, I had a question just generally about the Bundesliga. It seems to be currently in a bit of a state of flux. Casual observers like myself, you know, who don't follow the league week in, week out, recognize that over the past decade or so, the Bundesliga has grown in stature and quality of play, perhaps even surpassing the Serie A overall, certainly in UEFA coefficients. With what's happening at Bayern at the moment and the potential change up at the top of the organization over the summer, and then, you know, with Dortmund's general yo-yo cycle of, you know, achievement and then a couple of years of rebuilding and then achievement again, do you think that this is affecting the overall quality of offering that the Bundesliga has, or it's just a year or two of quick resets and we're going to see the big names, you know, dominating and carrying the league once again?
That, you know, that's a very good question. And I think that German football in general right now is in a little bit of a transition period. And I think that's just fine. That's just, it happens, right? Every league and country goes through certain cycles. And as such, you know, it's the Bundesliga turn right now, and German, the national team's turn right now to go through such a cycle and to replenish itself. And I mean, the Bayern is a great example, because they, as a club, they are totally in a rebuild, and they're completely in transition in terms of their personnel, not just on the field, but also in terms of directors, president, sporting director, etc. The same Dortmund, I think they're a little bit further in that, and they made a big cut after you know, Tuchel left the club. And I think they're actually in their transition, they're a little bit further than Bayern, even though, you know, they had a little bit of a rough patch under Lucien Favre, and there's still some concerns whether he's the right coach or not. I think that they, when it comes to player personnel, they're a lot further ahead of Bayern right now. And I think that's why I think some Dortmund fans were a little bit worried when they had that rough patch early on, that they were not using this opportunity that Bayern is creating to finally win a title, right? So I think that, you know, to generally answer your question, I think the league is going through a period of transition. It is not the best league in Europe right now, or like not even the top three league at the moment right now. But I think very much has the potential to be very soon again, because of, you know, German football does this. We go through a period of height where we do very well, and then, you know, a bit of period of lull, because unlike a lot of other leagues and countries, German football, the clubs have to live within the means. They can only spend what they generate because of the football model, right? And I that unfortunately also means that, you know, the rebuild has to come from within. And that can be a bit more difficult at times.
That's a very good point. Yeah, you have the 51% rule where, I mean, except for Wolfsburg and Bayer Leverkusen, the clubs have to be owned by the members, so to speak, to preserve some sort of like integrity of amateur within, you know, in quotation marks. That's a really interesting point. Crilly, did you have a question for Manu?
Servus Manu, wie geht's? Hey, wir danken dir, dass du heute dabei sein kannst. Super. So back to English. So I'm in favor of the 50 plus one rule coming to an end. So I wanted to know your opinion. Where does the, because I could talk about, I want to talk about Uli Hoeneß too, but that's another whole subject. So we just talked about Borussia Mönchengladbach is the number one team in Germany in the table. And they're, I think they have 3 points on Dortmund and 4 on Bayern. And they lost to Wolfsberger, Austrian Bundesliga team that is by no means considered, you know, top of the line program in Europe. And this has happened time and time again with everyone in Europe besides Bayern and Dortmund. You have these teams like Leverkusen who are getting dismantled in the Champions League right now. A couple of years ago, I remember Atletico Madrid destroyed Leverkusen in the Champions League, I think maybe 2015-16. You know, RB Leipzig, because they don't abide by the 50 plus one rule in the traditional sense, they are actually succeeding. They kind of have more ways to spend and more options to buy the players they want to buy and not have to answer to certain restrictions that other clubs do. Do you think it will come to a point where, you know, Bundesliga champions, you know, may rotate occasionally, but it seems like in Europe in the last 10 years, besides the Schwarz-Gelben and the Bayern, that, you know, we've had a rather weak showing in Europe for quite some time now, whether it's Gladbach under Lucien Favre a couple of years ago, who then, you know, I think they qualified back-to-back, but they made it out of the, I think they made it to the Europa League 1 year, finishing third in the group, and I don't remember what they did the second year, but Leipzig had a first rough first start a couple of years ago, but now are coming around. But if you look at Leverkusen, if you look at Hertha Berlin in the Europa League, very big disappointment a couple of years ago, lost to Brøndby, I think, in a qualifying match. The only team that I can think of in the last 5 or 6 years that has done really well deep into a tournament is Eintracht Frankfurt last year, making it almost to the Europa League final. So do you think that there's a chance that the 50 plus one rule will fall at some point simply because of competition and being able to keep up with the rest of the leagues?
I don't think the 50 plus one rule is the reason why German teams are not doing well in Europe, you know, because the 50 plus one rule is not going to change the fact that German teams are, in terms of budget, the second richest in Europe. When you look at the actual financial numbers, you look at a team like Wolfsburg, they have the same annual turnover than Atletico Madrid and the same annual budget for player investment than Atletico Madrid. You know, so Bundesliga teams, some people or some proponents of the 50 plus one rule falling, they say the 50 plus one rule is the reason. I think it's a little bit of an easy excuse to use that, because in the end of the day, these teams have money, right? And that's what it comes down to in football. I think that the Bundesliga teams, A, have not invested intelligently enough to be competitive in Europe. And that comes with the decline that we have been sort of experiencing. And a lot of it has to do with player development, but also coaching. I mean, this is, I think, the first year and maybe 3 or 4 years that we have had not just one or two good coaches, but 5 or 6, right, in the very top of the league, or maybe even 7 very good coaches. I look at last year or the year before, there was maybe 1 or 2 top coaches in German football, right? So I think a lot of it comes from that. I also think that this is an aspect that English clubs suffered with for a long time. They don't anymore, because the gap between the top 6 and the rest of the league is so massive now that they don't have that problem anymore. German teams, the Bundesliga only has 18 teams. And aside from Bayern, everyone can beat everyone every day, right? And that means that rotation is a lot more difficult in the Bundesliga than it is in a lot of other competitions. You look in Spain, the gap between the top three or four to the rest of the league is massive. Even in Italy, you don't have the density of teams that can finish, you know, between below Dortmund and Bayern. Everyone can finish anywhere. And you see some big clubs going down. So like these sides, they can't rotate. It's almost the excuse that English teams used for a long time that they didn't do well in Europe is because they had to focus on the league so much. I think that's very much true for the Bundesliga at the moment because it's just very, very difficult for sides to rotate because every game is a big game in Germany. Because, you know, like you lose a couple games and you can be in the relegation zone. And not even the big clubs are just, and not even the big clubs are protected from that. And I think that is actually something that has been a little bit overlooked. As for the 50+1 rule, I used to be in favor of abolishing it too. Then my club, 1860, got taken over by a so-called oligarch from Jordan. And trust me, that has cured me forever. Investors, any investors that we have seen in German football, you know, 90% of the time it's been a disaster. And you see that in England too. 90%, you know, we all look at Abramovich, which are the few cases where it worked. But we forget that 90% of the times clubs get devastated by it. I mean, Inter is a great example. How many different investors did you have until, you know, it's finally working again?
Yeah. And how many, a decade was...
Yeah. look at the other team in Milan. And look at Milan. That's an absolute disaster.
Complete disaster.
So one final thing is, you know, I was sitting there last year looking at this, and you know, I know the Champions League is obviously decided based on your finish from the previous season in the table. But if you're looking at, there was just such an unbelievable gap in quality and talent when you saw last season in the Achtelfinale, which is round of 16, yeah. Schalke against Manchester City was just such a demolition. This is, you know, these are the English champions versus the runners up in the Bundesliga from the season before, and the media even portrays it as a little tiny midget versus a giant Goliath, and it's too, the Bundesliga doesn't get, I don't think, the respect that necessarily sometimes it deserves. And then when you have a showing like this where Manchester City is literally playing with Schalke like they're a toy on the pitch for 180 minutes, it doesn't back in it, the media can then say, if you listen to ESPN FC, you listen to them, they run that match over like it's an afterthought, like, oh, this is, City's already in the quarterfinals, I mean there's no real reason to talk about what they do with Schalke. And Schalke are the runners up to Bayern now. Granted, yes, I know it was 23 points at the top between one and two, but runners up are runners up. I can't help where the Dortmund had an off year and, you know, Leverkusen kind of blew the chances. But that's to me, this is the eye opener to me, is the fact that there's always this perception that the Bundesliga is weak and less, the lesser league in the top five. So, how do you think we overcome that?
But doesn't that go together with how they always, I mean, I remember growing up, whenever it was time for a World Cup or European Championships, no one ever gave Germany a chance, and then Germany stood there still playing in the final anyway. I mean, it goes together with that, I think, like a historical fact that, you know, people focus and media focuses around big names and big stars, and German football traditionally, maybe, you know, especially after the 1990, maybe didn't have the biggest names in world football after the Matthäus generation until this new generation that won the World Cup, and maybe, you know, and people, you know, the you know, that's how the media works, you know. I don't take that more seriously than that, but we're getting sidetracked.
One quick thing on
season. Go.
Did that result against Schalke, that was 90% the results that season in England were like that too.
True. Right. I wanted to ask you before we let you go about Borussia Dortmund. I mean, last time Inter played Borussia, they had the derby against Schalke. Next week, when they play Dortmund, they play, it's their Klassiker, as you said, against Bayern Munich. Inter, you know, you could say that Inter have definitely been lucky with the draw in that case. But I mean, how do you think Borussia Dortmund will act? Where do you think they will put their efforts more into? The game against Inter or their Klassiker?
Well, they have to. Both games are so crucial. you know, they have to win both those games. Period. That's just
I understand.
They will not. And this, I mean, this plays back to the earlier conversation. You know, for Borussia Dortmund, they cannot divide their attention at the moment because the Bundesliga is just such a strong competition. I mean, they played Wolfsburg on the weekend, which, you know, could finish in the top four. Now they got Inter sandwiched in between between Bayern. I think maybe the one saving grace for Borussia Dortmund in that sense is that Niko Kovac is staying at Bayern, and the club is in such a you know, they might be to focus on Inter a little bit more. It might be the most serious opponent. No, you're laughing, but it's true. I mean,
yeah, I know. We spoke this summer, and we thought that both of us said that soon a Portuguese manager will take over at Bayern Munich. I think we both kind of agreed on that on Twitter.
Here's a chance, I think. Yeah.
Right, but what do you predict how the game will end on Tuesday?
Oh, that's. I think that, you know, I think, I mean, you guys are not going to like to hear that, but I think Dortmund are going to win this game.
Yeah, no, I that's what I think as well. So thanks for saying it.
I don't think they're going to win it by enough to overturn the first leg. I think they're going to win it like 1-0 or 2-1. It's not going to be. It's such a difficult game on so many levels because of the way Conte plays. And I think Dortmund will have to play a perfect game. I'm very much looking forward to it because I'm going to be there. I'm going to cover the game on Tuesday.
Nice one.
So I'm really looking forward to it, yeah. But I think it's going to be a very, very close game, and I think Dortmund are the more likely team to win it.
I think you're right because of the home advantage, and also Dortmund's at home are a completely different animal to Dortmund away. So if people want to follow you on Twitter, what's your handle, and have you got something you want to plug before we let you go?
Yeah, so yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Manuel Beth. That's MANUELVETH. And I just did a story on the game yesterday. If you want to read up a little bit on Niko Kovac and the problems that Bayern face at the moment, that's on I published that on Forbes. And then today I was in Düsseldorf. I covered the Düsseldorf against Köln Rhein Derby. There's a story going up on Pro Soccer USA on Zach Steffen. And Alfredo Morales, the two U.S. boys playing for Düsseldorf, I spoke to both of them today after the match. And a little bit of a different story on that.
Nice one. Thanks so much for coming on, Manuel. We'll definitely have you on soon again.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Manuel. Thanks. Take care. Right. Let's talk a little bit about the Dortmund game. I mean, the first game ended really well for us, for Inter, from an Inter perspective. I'd like to build on what Manuel said and say that what I also think that Inter will probably struggle. I don't see us winning this game. I see us drawing this game. So therefore, the first person I turn to in my moment of negativity is Mr. Positivity. Mo, tell me why I'm wrong.
No, I don't think you're wrong. I think we're going to draw the game. I mean, look, the one saving grace is Sensi's heralded return. You know, finally, we're going to get the main man back. And perhaps that's going to inspire a Barcelona-esque or a counter-Barcelona-esque performance like we did. And of course, you know, Dortmund aren't as competitive as Barca are. So hopefully, if that sort of presentation is made by the players in Dortmund, then we could come out with something in the match. But by and large, I think, you know, as Conte has clearly said, as we've seen, you know, from the players so far, this team is struggling for fitness. Everyone's tired, especially in the midfield. We're going to get pressured. They're going to run, come at us, hold the ball. So I think the best that we should realistically hope for here is a draw. I think, you know, a win for either side off that draw, like Manuel kind of said, would probably be a slim one, pertaining more to like a fortuitous run of events than actually dominating a match. So I think it's going to be an ugly game by Inter, and hopefully we'll walk away with a point.
And Mo says it's going to be an ugly game. Kriti, what are you expecting? Are you expecting an ugly Inter win or a beautiful Dortmund win, given that you support both teams?
I don't necessarily think that it's going to be an ugly game, because Dortmund can play very beautifully at home. There is a lot to be said about the fact that they are a different team at home. There was a run of form under Thomas Tuchel a couple of years ago, where they had, I don't know, like two seasons undefeated in the Bundesliga at home. And that finally ended with the appointment of Peter Bosch, 2017-18. They have made the Westfalenstadion a fortress. However, I will tell you this, and I wish I could come to you great Inter supporters with a little bit more insight on Borussia Dortmund, because but they are a very hard team to figure out this season. I do not believe that the turmoil that exists within the club is over. I think because they got a result against Wolfsburg, who were previously undefeated in, they were the one of the only undefeateds in all of Europe in the top five leagues within their own league, that finally came to, I think it was Juve and Liverpool and Wolfsburg were the last three to be undefeated in their own leagues within the top five in Europe. So Dortmund beat them pretty handily, 3-0. Possibly future Inter player Mario Götze scored 88th minute penalty. Very, very, very exciting to see that. Again, Mario Götze is the center of a lot of controversy with Dortmund because of the alleged blacklisting, because of his non-contract signing. Is he the right fit for the lineup? Should he be playing at the, you know, up front instead of Reus, who prefers not to play in the central center forward or striker position? He prefers to play right behind that. Just kind of as a center attacking mid, or even on the wing. You know, he's been a left winger for a lot of his career. You know, Reus has made it publicly clear that he does not agree with Favre's tactics in terms of where he plays him, especially when Paco Alcácer or Mario Götze are not playing. Tactically, Dortmund are not as complete as the results show in recent days. The last time we spoke on this podcast, they were going through a little bit of I would say not a crisis, but they'd had some pretty poor results. They've turned it back around on the results side. However, again, Favre is always one loss or one bad draw against a bad team away from being right back on the hot seat. Inter have the team, the squad, to beat Dortmund. They do. They've already proven that. They did it just a few weeks ago at the San Siro. Yes, winning in Dortmund is a different scenario altogether. But what Conte does with this grit and grind sort of play, his style of play with the way he grinds out results, it's going to be ugly from Inter's perspective should they win. But it's different between the last two Inter with Pioli and with like Spalletti. These guys don't quit. I see this time and time again, week after week. I see these late results coming. Inter drops behind 1-0, they end up winning 2-1, and that's the difference. There's a determination and a resilience that this Inter side has this year over the past 3 or 4 or 5 years.
For sure.
So that's why I am not quite on board with saying that Dortmund are going to win. I think Dortmund's best case scenario is a draw, because I think Inter will play them hard and they will play them for 90 minutes and Inter will score at least one goal. The other thing to consider is last time we spoke, when Dortmund goes up 1-0, they almost certainly concede. They have a form of almost 3 expected goals per game when they go up 1-0, which means they're ripe for conceding. So just take that into consideration, that if it's 1-0 Dortmund, that is by no means the end of the match. Inter have plenty of opportunities probably coming their way, because the team plays more passive and they play more to the with a style. Favre goes into this almost Mourinho style of 1-0 means that's the end of the result, without the personnel to actually perform those tactics. So he's still trying to fit a round square into a round hole, whatever you want to call it. Dortmund are not built for what Favre wants to do, and eventually that will catch up with you.
William, so that means we will win. Are you confident now?
I was confident beforehand, Nima.
I'm glad to hear it then. Well, by all means, then fill us up with more confidence and happiness and joy.
No, this is obviously going to be harder than it was 2 weeks ago, because that's a very intimidating stadium. And, you know, Inter don't have a huge amount of experience playing in those kinds of stadiums in the last few years, but let's remember how well they played at the Camp Nou in a similarly hostile environment a month or so ago. That was nearly a victory, or it could have been a victory at least. So that gives me confidence on that front. I agree that, you know, Dortmund have got this kind of soft underbelly that I think a Conte side can exploit. And actually, we did that very well in the home game. Just that sense that, you know, they play very pretty football, but often it doesn't quite lead to much. It's almost maybe a little bit too beautiful and not sort of efficient enough. And we've got the kind of team that can exploit that. The other thing that gives me confidence is that Dortmund have to win this game. We don't. I think a draw is better for us than it is for them, because we'd be ahead in the head-to-heads. And so we would have the advantage going into the last two games. And this is that will suit Conte quite well, because I think we have the team that can play quite well on the break in a game like this. I trust our defence to not collapse in front of any sort of sustained pressure against Dortmund. That doesn't mean we won't concede, but I don't think that we will be found wanting in terms of character or in terms of resilience. So I think it'll be a close game to the end. And, you know, it's this team has clearly got character. I mean, we've seen it in these last two games. They weren't at their best and they found a way to get the results over the line. I have to see whether Sensi's going to be fit. That would be a huge boost, particularly if we're playing. He's dependent, regardless of what style of play is going to be employed. He's a huge boost. I do know. I have just seen that Marco Reus has got an ankle injury, and he might not be fit for this match because he picked it up in that game against Wolfsburg on Saturday. We'll have to see whether he's actually ready. He might have to miss both of those matches, but that would be another small boost. Yeah, I think this is going to be close. I can't give you certainty that Inter won't lose, but I think it would be. I think the performance will be the right one. That's what I feel confident about.
And we're recording this on a Sunday night, 9 p.m. CET, 8 p.m. CET. And just now, moments ago, it was confirmed that that Mr. Kovac has been sacked by Bayern Munich.
Ooh.
Niko Kovac has been sacked by Bayern Munich, yeah.
Oh, that's, well, we'll have Perisic back then, I guess.
Yeah, well, it depends. It depends if the special one, I don't know how you say the special one in German.
Oh. I love breaking news live this has never happened before.
Yeah, no, it's and it has, but it's not been this exciting. I think this talk of Mourinho going to Arsenal, I think that is just mental. There's no way that's going to happen. That would be him committing career.
Mm-hmm.
But I think him going to Bayern Munich would be so interesting for so many reasons. FC Hollywood,
Nima,
the special one, yeah.
Dortmund have a decision to make, okay? With the Clásica coming up, you're not going to win both of these. You have to choose which one you want to win. The squad is this is not Liverpool. This is not Manchester City. This is you have to choose. This is a brutal back to back. This is insane. You're talking about the 1 point off the lead in Serie A Inter side and Bayern Munich, your eternal nemesis, who, by the way, you had a 9-point lead on last season, and everyone were declaring Dortmund German champions at Christmas. And I don't remember quite, I must have had amnesia, but I thought Bayern won again last year. So that would indicate a 9-point blown lead with only one half of the season to go. Dortmund have a chance, and that's why I will not say to knock Bayern out this coming week. They can stumble them. They can punch them in the face and make them and stumble. But unless Dortmund have a 20-point lead with three matches to go, I don't know that they will win a German championship anytime soon.
Okay.
There has to be a decision, though, I believe, on Lucien Favre's part on which match he considers to be the greater good. And Dortmund talk constantly about how the Champions League is integral to their financial capabilities and what they can spend in the Sommerpause on transfers and such forth. And of course, the winter break is also coming up. I think you have a decision to make, plain and simple. I don't think you're taking 6 points from this week. You need to decide which three are more important.
Okay. Well, speaking of which, let's quickly just go around the table, the virtual table, if you will. Give me results and goal scorers. So I'll say 1-1. I think Jadon Sancho will score, and I think Big Rom will continue to score. What about you, Mo?
Yeah, I reckon I fancy a 1-1 as well, but I'll see Lautaro finding something special for the match. So yeah, 1-1 for me too.
Kriti?
I think Inter win 2-1. I think that Julian Brandt scores for Borussia Dortmund, and I think that Romelu Lukaku scores, and I think that Lautaro scores, and I think Inter take the 3 points.
Will?
Well, I don't want to be dull, but I did have 1-1 in my mind as well, and I wouldn't be too disappointed with that. I'll go with Brandt. He was the guy I was thinking of because he's been looking, well, from at least what I've seen, he's been looking pretty fun recently. Mm-hmm. But I'll take your Lukaku and raise you a Lautaro for the equaliser instead.
Romelu.
So this episode is two firsts. So we're first of all scooping a breaking news,
yeah,
and we've also got Kriti out optimisting us, you know.
Yeah, that's
the streak continues. The streak continues.
Yeah,
I love it, man.
I've yet to read anything about aviating pigs, but yes, the M is nigh and all that. Let's move on to.
Well, in fairness, he does support both, so maybe he's just being pessimistic about Dortmund.
Inverted jinx. I like that. We love.
Well, somebody, one of them. I have to be down on one of them. I can't say they're both. It's going to be a 5-5.
For a draw. 90-minute classic. Then you're just sitting on the fence. It's perfect. Yeah.
Exactly. You're diplomatic. Right. Let's move on to what happened in midweek and also yesterday as it is now, Sunday today. Two games that actually reminded me a lot of each other. Two games against two teams that. That really pressured Inter, where Inter had to dig deep to win. Bologna, obviously, being much better team organized, especially in down the middle, causing Inter all sorts of trouble and scoring. And for once, I got to say, I thought the referee was absolutely excellent. I mean, I had no problems with any of the decisions that went against Inter or for Inter. I thought he was spot on, and I thought he used the VAR in the correct way. Just as a side note, but I'm really impressed with Inter. I mean, this talk of the Scudetto and all this nonsense, in my opinion, nonsense. Sure, if you want, I'll play the game. If Inter are to win the Scudetto, sure. But then these are the kinds of games where Inter need to come up with the 3 points when they're not playing good, when they're a goal behind, and that man scores too. So sure, I'll give you that. Mo, you're Mr. Positivity. Is it too soon?
But is he now?
Yeah.
Wait right. A minute now.
Yeah, yeah, okay. No. Okay.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, that's his title. It's his title.
Mo, seriously though, do you think it's realistic to talk of, when, if not now, when is it realistic to talk about a Scudetto, a serious Scudetto challenge?
April.
Good. Nice, short, sweet answer. That's all I'm looking for. No, I like it. I like it. Good, short, sweet answer. No, okay, April. I can live with that. Good. Tell you what, I'll sign under that. If Inter are within 2 points of Juventus or ahead by 2 points or whatever in April, I'll join. I'll you and I officially join the Scudetto bandwagon, okay?
Mm-hmm. Not a day before.
On a day before, April 1st, you two are the witnesses and everyone listening. Nima, yes, and Mo will join the Scudetto bandwagon on April 1st if Inter are within 2 points of Juventus or in the top position, okay? Got good, brilliant. Right, so Mo, what did you like the most about the Bologna game and the Brescia game? Because I think they kind of reminded me of each other kind of bit. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. In when I was looking at the matches and then eventually how they played out, you know, they played out very similarly. Very, very tough away sides, all to play for. I think the one thing, I mean, we've all spoken about character, but for me, the one character in particular that stood out is that of Lukaku's. You know, so. The amount of pressure, you know, when you come in and fill in Icardi's shoes, that already puts a lot of pressure on any incoming striker. The striker's role in particular is very, you know, is right out there for everyone to see. So for him to be able to bail us out on two matches in a row in such difficult circumstances, I think that, you know, we can talk about the camaraderie and how he's allowing Lautaro to find himself and develop and the partnership that's developing between the two of them, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, it's all down to that one single change and that is the addition of Lukaku. Sorry. So I think character, of course, Conte, grit, determination, but also Lukaku. We can't take away, the detractors are gonna, scoff at every poor first touch or every missed pass. You know, that stuff happens. But at the end of the day, a big chunk of why everything's going so well at this point in time so far is Big Rom's addition up front.
Amen. Will, do you agree with that, or do you have anything to add to that?
No, I mean, Lukaku's numbers speak for himself. You know, he's ever since Corriere dello Sport did a front page during the October international break saying that he's not the champion that Conte expect him to be yet. He's scored 6 goals in 5 games. So more of those front pages, please.
Zazzaroni is not having a good season, is he?
Well, you know who Zazzaroni supports, don't you? He's a Bologna fan, so he's done himself in there.
Yeah, I know, but it's generally he's not having a good moment.
He's in a bad moment. As the Italians would say. No, as far as the games themselves said, I see what you're saying. There are similarities, but I did see them as different matches, actually. I felt, whereas Brescia was a real struggle, and Winter really had to get in the trenches and dig out the result, I think they fell over the line a bit in that match. Whereas this one, I felt like we kind of drove over the line. There was more of an authority about this performance, not least because, whereas with Brescia, we took the lead with a fortuitous goal, scored the second one in probably the worst moment of the match, and then kind of just clung on for dear life towards the end of the match. Against Bologna, we came from behind, which actually hasn't happened since Lazio-Inter in May 2018. I'm sure we'll have happy memories of that match. It's the first game we've won after going behind in Serie A since then. And I felt like it was the right result. I felt like it was... I thought it was a deserved win. I mean, Bologna were certainly... Their game plan worked better than ours did in the first half, but they didn't actually create much, did they? I mean, Conte did say, I don't remember Handanovic doing much, whereas Skorupski was quite busy during that match. So I don't think the result is undeserved. I thought that Lazzaro was a huge positive. Maybe we can talk about him in a second. Candreva made a good impact off the bench. I just like the fact that this team can come from behind. I mean, even when they're tired and they're distracted possibly by a huge match on Tuesday, you know, whatever you want to say about this team, they are incredibly solid, and it feels sustainable. So, you know, I feel positive at the moment. You know, obviously Juventus will take care of themselves. You know, if they keep doing what they're doing, then, you know, there's nothing we can do about that. So there's no point getting fed up about what they're doing in Turin. But yeah, I think only positives from this match. I didn't feel like it was a disastrous performance when it was 1-0. And I felt quite justified in feeling that way when the final whistle went. But, and I said, Conte was very, he was very, very, very big on his praise after on Tuesday. He was as if Inter just won a war or something, you know, he was so scared of that match. And like, in the highest adversity, he somehow managed to get it done. He seemed a bit more optimistic, I think, after this match. He's saying that, you know, he was a little bit more optimistic about the game's head, because he's been very, very sort of he's been very insistent on this idea that Inter don't have the squad and the players that we've got are going to run out of steam. He didn't really do that. That was the first time he didn't really speak about that last night in a while. And of course, he came up with that great line, which everyone enjoyed, when he was asked about the penalty. And he said, there's one thing I like, and that's that Inter are starting to annoy people again. They're starting to dare fastidio. So he was a happy man, and I think he had every reason to be.
Yeah, he did. I'm really glad. I'm really, really glad you brought up Valentino Lazzaro, because I wanted to talk about that, because I thought, you know, the first game that he played against Slavia, he was not exactly great. He was a disaster against Sassuolo. And then everyone was thinking, you know, there was these talks of him leaving in January, etc. Then all of a sudden, you know, Conte starts him because he's worked with him, and he plays really, really, really well. And he puts in a really good shift. I think I got to give credit to you, Critty, because you said, if I'm not mistaken, previously on this pod that you think that his time will come when we were being really critical. So bask in the glory.
Well, I called the Dortmund match almost right down the middle the last time they played. So
that's true.
I would take that But yeah, it's where is the patience going in football when, you know, Bayern are 4 points off the lead in November, and they're sacking managers, and then, you know, of course, now you have with the situation that we're talking about right now. Yes, with players who come into a new system from a different league, Bundesliga is you know, playing for Hertha Berlin, as I told you, in front of 30,000 people in a 70,000 seat stadium, six tenths empty. It's not the same as playing in San Siro in front of a packed house when you're playing various teams, where whoever it may be, Milan or Juve or something. But you have to have patience. You can't say that someone is done and wasted and done and dusted by October. I mean, we the last time we recorded and talked about him was in October, and it was before the Dortmund Milan Inter match last time. So it's amazing to me how you can see two appearances by one player and say, yeah, that's we're going to judge him based off that. This is his Inter tenure. This is what he did in minimal minutes of play, and we should sell him in the winter. No. If, as I said, Conte, love him or hate him, if he has an eye out for you, he has certain things and elements about your style of play, what you can bring to his system that he likes about you. And unfortunately, I got to say, coming from Hertha Berlin, who haven't won jack shit in their entire history, and coming to Inter, who are treble winners and three-time European champions and, you know, almost 20-time Italian champions, it's a little bit of a jump up. I hate to say it. It's a little bit of a jump up. And so you can't say that you're coming. I mean, it's almost like Hertha's like minor leagues going into the major leagues. It's such a drastic jump. I have faith that Conte was going to work the things out with him. And now you're seeing sort of, you know, I'm not going to say, well, he's played well now. Now all the issues are over. No, I mean, he's probably going to have a few more bumps and bruises this season. But I said, at least give him, at the very minimum, give him till the summer, till May, to have 38 match days to work the weaknesses out with this player, so he can you know, be a productive player for this Inter system and this and you know, moving forward into 2020, 2021. So I'm happy that this is that we because we really dogged him the last time. I mean, there was a lot of
Let's be honest, against Sassuolo he was awful.
I'm not going to deny that.
It was horrible, and that's why I wanted to bring this up, because you did say give this guy some chance because he is good.
Absolutely.
And you did say it, so I did want to give you that. Right. I thought,
but yeah, we've kept Kandreva on board for how many years? And okay, sure, he has his moments every now and then, but I mean, let's be honest here.
Let's be honest. He's been the most consistent Inter player, Candyman. So let's be honest.
Can we praise one more individual before we?
Sure.
Bastoni.
Yes.
He's just not even talked about, and that's probably the biggest compliment I can pay him. He's just another defender that we have, and he plays like an expert.
And he's so young, and he's
fantastic.
And he sounds exactly, I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but he speaks Italian with the exact same dialect that Massimo Moratti does, and I like that.
That's a rogue connection you've just made there.
No, because he's from Casalmaggiore. He's from the north. Yeah, and he sounds exactly like if you watch early interviews of Massimo Moratti when he was younger, they have even the same voice. It's and I have absolutely no problems with having the reincarnation of Don Massimo in this team. I just wanted to put that out there. Right. Hashtag Massimo, the greatest Inter president. Right. Let's move on just quickly. I mean, we were playing the Hellas Verona after this game, and it's at the San Siro. Finally, Inter play at home after three away games, and although, you know, Hellas are a good team and all that, but at San Siro, I'm expecting a blowout win. Although Eddie Salcedo, the player, the youngster who Inter have loaned out to Genoa, who they bought from Genoa and then loaned him to Genoa, and then Genoa sent him on loan to Hellas Verona. The teenager scored his first goal today in that match against Brescia, which is unfortunately known for other incidents, which I think we'll probably discuss later on in the Moji section. I think the work that Ivan Juric has done with this Hellas Verona team, they're a very difficult team to beat. I had them dead last together with Lecce. I don't think that's going to happen. They play. I think they're probably gonna make it because they look. I don't see the collapse being imminent to put it that way. But I do think that this is a team that Inter should comfortably brush aside. Just quickly going through for everyone, starting with you, Mo. Do you agree with that? And give me a prediction results.
No, I agree. I agree. It's going to be the easiest match. The easiest should be the easiest league match we'll have faced in a while. I think it's going to be not a blowout win, but maybe a 2, possibly even a 3-0, a clean sheet. And a straightforward win, hopefully a nice goal by Sensi on his return to the San Siro and a couple of goals for our two strikers. Where I see it.
I can live with that. Kriti?
I'm very disappointed that I expected something a little bit more positive, Mo. I mean, it's not going to be a blowout win. I mean, come on. I'm over here playing with 3-1 or 4-1 in my head, and he's like, 2-0. No, I really do think that this is going to be, as Mo said, I could not agree more. It's going to be one of the, I would never think I would say this in the last 5 years. One of the easiest matches for Inter, because the word easy and Inter just don't go together. It's like two polarizing, it's like two magnets shooting off from each other. But I think this is going to be a very, I don't think there's going to be any need for resiliency this time around or competitive drive, you know, just come to business, come to work to do business, take care of it early, get up 2-0. Maybe Hellas gets one in late, but I'm thinking 3-1 or 4-1. I think this is going to be a very nice and easy, quick 90-minute 3 points.
William?
Well, that's all a little bit too optimistic for my liking. I was very comfortable about this match before we said it was going to be the easiest game ever in Inter's history. So now I'm...
Hold on. I did not. No one said that.
No, we said of the season. No. I think we said of the season. Yeah. Not in our history.
Yeah. One thing that does make me optimistic is that Verona have won their last two games, which was better than playing a team after they're angry and have just lost. So they can afford a sort of nice, painless defeat before they go into the international break. They're in the top half, which is rather impressive, actually. Not what I was expecting at the start of the season, as you said, Nima. But yeah, the Dortmund game is going to take up a lot of energy. This is going to be the last match in that cycle. So there could be a bit of rustiness, but I would be confident for a 2-0 win with Lukaku and Barella. So yes, I don't see a slip up going back to being serious. I think that I don't think it'll be a rout, but I don't think it'll be too tough.
Nice one.
The Parma lesson will have been well learned, right?
You'd hope so. Yes.
I mean, otherwise, what did we go through that for? You know.
Mo, you and I have been supporting Inter for 25 years. Are you telling me? Dude, I don't think I need to tell you that there is no logic when it comes to Inter. It is what it is. You just endure it. Right. Let's move on to the part of the show where we pay tribute, rip the piss out of, and criticize someone or something heavily in the world of football, starting with the positivity, which we presented by Mr. Mohamed Nasser.
He works a lot. He's intelligent. And he surprises people sometimes with his ideas. Not easy to find one person of these qualities.
Yeah, so my Moratti of the week has to be Gagliardini and Vecino for backing up Conte in his 3-week rant on the lack of depth and quality in the side. We play Vecino, everyone says he's crap, put Gagliardini in. We play Gagliardini, everyone says he's crap, put Vecino back in. It's clear that the midfield needs reinforcement, and the more Conte plays all these off the bench guys, the more it becomes evident that January needs we need a break. So we need a buy, a real quality to come in and rotate with Brozovic, Barella, and Sensi. My reverse Moratti of the week is the third man in the midfield.
Nice one. Let's move on to something slightly more comical. This week's frog, which will be presented by Mr. Will Beckman.
È clamoroso! Autogol di Ranocchia!
Yes, we've been away for 2 weeks, so I'm going to take something that happened actually last week, as it were, but because it's since the last pod, I'm going to take it. And also because it's so brilliant. We're going back to Germany for this week's Frog. It's Ron Robert Zieler, who I didn't realise used to play for Manchester United. I've completely wiped that from my memory. He was involved in a rather exciting 3-3 draw in the German second division, Bundesliga 2, last Saturday against Karlsruhe. Hannover scored what seemed to be a 93rd minute winner. But then 2 minutes later, in the 95th minute, Daniel Gordon scored an equaliser to make it 3-3. And at that moment, as he wheeled away to celebrate, Ron Robert Zieler very kindly responded to this last-minute sucker punch by punching Daniel Gordon in the testicles. Very, very, very kind of him. I don't think, as you do. I don't think it was intentional. It was just a little unfortunate the way he sort of ran past Zieler as he was going to wheel away to celebrate, and the ball was sort of bouncing out of the goal as this happened, and Zieler went for the ball, and well, he got the other ball, as it were. A little unfortunate. And of course, he got sent off for his troubles, for violent conduct.
That's absolutely brilliant.
So, yes, this has got a lot of coverage. So by all means, seek it out on social media. It looks very painful indeed.
Indeed. Speaking of people I know that you absolutely love, Giancarlo Marocchi just said that.
God. This pod was going so well.
Giancarlo Marocchi, I only bring it up because I know how much Will absolutely detests this man. Yeah. He is like Will's nemesis. Everything can be great, and then as soon as Marocchi comes on, you can literally feel rage.
He would have been sore after Bologna's defeat yesterday, so I'm delighted for that. Him and Zadza can go and sit in a corner somewhere.
No, he said that he thinks Inter are a static team. Right, let's move on.
You're a static pundit.
Very much so. Let's move on to something much more comical. Something much more negative. This week's
This is not comical.
No, it's not far, comical. Far from it. This week's Mod G, which we presented by Mr. Critty Smith.
So let me preface by saying I was not going to talk about this, but how can we not? Of course, because it keeps coming back in our faces. What I was originally going to talk about were the nasty, disgusting tweets by the spoiled Bayern Munich fan base in regards to Niko Kovac. These guys are 7-time defending German champions, are by no means out of it, and just the detestable language they're using against this guy, who, by the way, won the German championship last year. I think that just, that just
didn't he win the double? Didn't he win the double?
Yeah, he won the double. Yes, he did. Yeah, but just the fact that he's won the Bundesliga is you would think that they finished eighth place last season. But of course, we're not going to talk about that and the Bayern Munich fans. We're going to talk about once again our old friend, our awesome little buddy we like to kick the shit out of, which is our racism in Italy segment of the month, and this. This is coming back up again. Obviously this time it's directed at Balotelli, and I'm not going to go into the whole details of what played out. I just have a suggestion, and I think I brought this up on another podcast, and Nima, we brought this up last season. I know I mentioned it at least last season. I don't understand how at this point there's no defense of racism. So it's like whatever I have to say right now, it's like there should be no. Yeah, but it's like if these things continue to happen, relegations must happen. Points must be deducted. It's the only way that I can see, because the league's not going to take care of it. Obviously, the league doesn't care. They turn a blind eye to it all the time. Very minimal punishments are handed out. This is a chronic problem. This is not an isolated incident. This has happened. This happens in Serie A stadium after Serie A stadium after Serie A stadium. This happens almost at this point, like I said, monthly, weekly. It's incredibly chronic, and it's so well seated within the league and the ultras, and that's sad. It's sad that in 2019, and we continue to give it attention, but you have to. The only way that you can get rid of it is to give it attention, but give it the attention to eradicate it. And that's why I'm saying drastic things call for drastic measures. So you know, football is a sport and we love it, but it's not the most important thing. This racism is far bigger than any sport. So I can only, the only thing I can think of is to say, okay, you know, we'll start off with 1 and 2 point, you know, deductions. And if that doesn't get your attention, then it's 10 point deductions, or we just relegate you straight down to Serie B if you just can't get your act together. I don't see what else you can do at this point in order to get the point across that this is a serious issue. This is going to be taken seriously. We live in a time and place where this should absolutely not be happening, much less condoned or acted out upon anymore. So that's the emoji of the week, is once again this damn record that seems to be on repeat in this league, which is one of the world's greatest leagues and historically may be the greatest league in all of football history. I you know, it can be argued, certainly there, Serie A has had some glorious periods, but this is such a just nasty stain on this league, and it doesn't ever have a chance to go away and calm down, because before you know it, the next event happens. And so that's this week's mochi, and I really think that something drastic needs to happen to put this problem to rest once and for all, or at least start to head in the right direction. It's not going to happen overnight, but by doing nothing, we're just condoning it.
Yeah, and I think when the Hellas Verona president, I think these words are so profoundly stupid. The people from Verona are a special kind of people. They like to joke with people in a sympathetic manner, and they are not racist. They're just ironic.
I think
that speaks for itself. It's so stupid. There's nothing more to add. Right, let's leave it at that. I'd like to thank Manuel Vett for coming on once again, and I'd also like to thank you, Mo.
Hey, always a pleasure, guys.
And I'd also like to thank you, Critty, for being on. Don't be a stranger.
Oh, absolutely not. Thank you for having me. 3 points for the Nerazzurri, and of course, a Champions League win at the Westfalenstadion.
And as always, Mr. William Beckman.
Thank you. Good evening. Forza Inter. Nothing more to add.
And as always, I'm your host, Nima Tavalli Ruzzari, wishing you a good week. 6 points, and sempre e solo Forza Inter. Forza Inter!